You may have noticed that I have not put a title on today's lecture, and that is because I don't know what to talk about. And Kamala suggested something just before she ran out the door, and I might talk about that, but I'd like to first tell you about a conversation I had on Monday. So I had a meeting with a religious leader, and there was a discussion about philosophy. And in that philosophical discussion, that person used two words or two phrases or philosophical concepts. One was objective reality and the other was truth. Now, I was listening and having a very difficult time because these two concepts require a lot of definition. Now, I know spiritualists will all think or will all be quite sure that they understand what is the truth, because truth is something which seems to go hand in hand with religious philosophies. Now, I'm not saying that there is not a concept as truth, and I am not saying that a religion by definition cannot have a truth, and I am not saying that a religion by definition has the truth. I just want to examine this term, truth, and then from that go to what is objective reality. Now, absolute truth and relative truth are also terms which are used often in spiritual philosophical discussions. Now, relative truth is usually described as that truth which is relative to me, the perceiver, the observer, the actor, in the limited and relative way in which I deal with the world around me. And that which is absolute, or which is representing reality in general, from the higher perspective, so to speak, the divine, is understood to be a truth which is universal and relevant to all people, all places, at all times. Now, we discussed last week about how the divine, the supreme, the personality within whom everything rests, we called the balance, we called the support within the matrix. We defined the role and functioning of this personality as the support of all that be. And from that point of view, when we speak of a truth which relates to all people, is relevant to all people at all times, that definition certainly fits, and it fits quite well. After all, it makes perfect sense that the support of all things would be the same, in the same relationship to all that which is relative to the support of all things, all that which is supported within it. So the definition of that universal, or even beyond universal, existential truth would certainly be a universal kind. Not, I don't mean the physical universe, universal for all beings everywhere. Now, from that point of view, I think we would have agreement amongst even atheists. We would have agreement even amongst people who have no belief in any system or structure of any kind, from the religious or spiritual or even any other form of esoteric understanding point of view. We wouldn't really have an argument. After all, the definition that we gave in regard to the balance, to the support, to the foundation upon which everything sits would also be quite consistent with any definition given by physicists in all different fields. After all, it's just a way in which everything rests within space. I find this very interesting because if you think about it, regardless of how you define that support, everybody would agree that everything is supported. Now that's very interesting. Just think about it, that regardless of your philosophy, regardless of who you are or what you believe, there are certain fundamental truths which are just required by all people at all times if you're going to understand anything about existence. Now, regardless of how you define, that fundamental source of existence, that there is one, everybody would agree. Some would say it was due to simply some material physical arrangement. Some would say it's a spiritual arrangement, but everyone would agree there is an arrangement there. So, if you think about it, you could expand many different philosophical concepts which are discussed by spiritualists and also discussed by those who spiritualists would call materialists. And basically, they speak about the same thing using other language. Explanations which in, let's say, for example, the Vedic philosophy would require demigods who organize a certain feature. In a materialistic, so to speak, now, I'm using that word, philosophy, it would be a certain mode or system within nature that organizes it. Now, there are certain ingredients within the definitions of, let's say, purely mechanistic kind of people, which would be seriously different. For example, rebirth, you know, life after life, that the living being continues through evolutionary cycles and taking birth again and again. Now that would be a definite difference. Yet there are many who would even question that from a scientific point of view, specifically in unexplained reactions that have taken place in this body. Even people do hypnosis, they bring people back, they notice that there are other realms that people have come from. But when we're speaking about understanding the present, right now, except for the psychological events which have brought us to the present, we could basically have an agreement between how things are structured amongst all different people, because that's not really the point of contention. However, there may be some discussion about points like karma, why a kind of reaction is taking place. The explanation of why would perhaps be a point of contention. For example, if you kill animals, you will get reactions. So the spiritualist might talk about it being a sin. A materialist, or somebody who does not understand spiritual energy, might give an explanation from the point of view of energy. For example, there are people who are energetically aware, who you would not necessarily call religious, but who feel energy, who, when they go near a slaughterhouse, can feel this intense horror, this energy of just pain and agony, which is coming from there. They feel it. They feel very badly about it, even ordinary people. So, they will always quote something they believe. Perhaps a religious literature, perhaps some authority has told them who they believe in, a prophet, or perhaps it has been channeled from some higher source or whatever. Now, I'm not making any judgment on whether any of this is right or wrong. I'm just trying to analyze what is reality, what is objective reality, what is truth. Because there are certain standards you can use to clarify the situation. Now, a scientifically minded person would say, well, we don't know what is the source. We don't have any conviction that is based in observable reality through experimentation, through the scientific method. We only have our theories, our ideas, and we can test them by seeing how it stacks up against what we see and how the reactions take place in certain tests. Now, you might have a situation where When it comes down to what one understands about reality, it boils down to our belief. One chooses to believe in a certain scriptural literature or a certain prophet or a certain channeling or even a revelation. The other chooses to believe in a theory or a trend of understanding. Now, I know that some people will say, well, wait a minute, it's really true what I believe. And it may be, I'm not saying that, but you'll have Vaishnavas believe it's true, you'll have Mayavadis believe it's true, you'll have Buddhists believe it's true, you'll have Christians believe it's true, you'll have Jews believe it's true. Everybody really believes what they see is true. So I'd like to discuss truth. Now, truth is a very difficult concept to deal with because we have to understand whose truth are we talking about here. And that is not just some new agey concept. That is really a philosophical concept because truth, because of its so-called absolute and relative existence, the structural way in which it can be conceived, by definition, has many centers of reality, each individual within that structure. Now, if I were to start speaking about my truth, and I was to quote and speak very eloquently, arguing in a very wonderful philosophical way, that may or may not impress you. Now, if my life was dedicated to impressing you with my truth, that would be a problem. If my life was not dedicated to that, and I was simply just being myself spiritually, that would not be a problem. If my life was dedicated to convincing you, then I would have to adjust myself to get into your point of view, to bring you from your point of view to my point of view. So it is very important, the point of view of each individual. Even if I want to convince you, I have to enter into your point of view and bring you to mine. So that means your point of view is a very real one. But that's not the very important point. The most important point is that I am the one who chooses to accept or believe something is true or not true. Even if I believe what a prophet said, even if I believe a scientific theory, even if I believe a literature, I am the one who makes the active step of belief. I say, I believe this. Now, my belief system, my belief values will structure the way in which I relate within that vast matrix of existence. So that is the same for everybody, regardless where they might be, all over the universe. Every single person is doing it in the exact same way. Now, what is it about belief that makes it so powerful? What is it? Why is it this belief such an extraordinary force? Because it's this belief which allows us to move in our chosen direction. It's this belief which gives us our vision of reality. It's this belief which gives us the power to move on. Now, many people might have a philosophy which includes God. For example, they may have a philosophy which is very advanced from the spiritual platform, very advanced, very complex, very amazingly explanatory of every little aspect of existence. Yet, belief is the thing which differentiates them from anyone else in this world. How deeply they believe in it. How they can become inspired by it through their belief. When I believe in something very, very, very strongly, that gives me an enormous power. Extraordinary healing has taken place. when people simply believed in the power of a healer or a preacher who could bring the force of God down to heal somebody. A doctor may look at this and say, that is bogus, that is cheating, I don't believe it. But the person who experienced it says, I believe. And they did experience it because they did believe. Now, just consider this point. Maybe you can understand where I'm moving with this. I'm trying to show the power of the living being, the power of the spiritual energy, the power of belief, the power of incredible faith. Because when we, the Spirit, have such belief, when we, the Spirit, experience that power through our faith, extraordinary things can happen. But then it becomes a question of what do you want to believe in? Now, just I'd like to put that in the context of this truth and objective reality, because I think these two terms have been misused to an extraordinary extent in philosophical and even non-philosophical discussions. First of all, if you were to say there is an objective reality, there is God, and there's the living beings, and there's this relation between them, and this all that's just the way it is, you are assuming that God has one way of creating a fundamental existence, and he has no other way, or she has no other way, of dealing with others who may or may not buy into that belief system. There's only one reality, and all the rest of it is illusion. But it is very possible that God is all love, the divine is all love, and gives the facility to every living being everywhere, the possibility to live their lives according to their belief and understand themselves according to the way in which they believe. Now, obviously, that's what's happening, and I don't even think that that's a point of contention, but what I'm trying to say is that our belief is what fuels all that we do, all that we perceive, all that we understand. And our truth is that which we believe to be true. And because of that, we can have variety of understandings, but we may also change our understanding. We may change what we understand to be the truth as we evolve through life. Today we may think something is a truth, tomorrow we may think it's an illusion. According to the different situations of our life, we may adjust accordingly what we believe is real, what we believe is valuable. Now someone may say, well, what is the point of all this? Now I'm getting disturbed. I don't see a point to it. You've just simply said that whatever you believe is true for you, but there is a truth beyond all of this. But then again, that's what you believe. Now, you don't have a direct perception of it being that truth. You don't have that connection that you can overview everything and understand that it is the truth. You believe it. You are convinced of it. Have you ever had a conversation where they philosopher or a spiritualist or even a scientist or anybody who says, well, you know, in reality, I don't know. Nobody really knows what is anything. However, I strongly believe with great conviction that this is true. It's such a refreshing kind of conversation to have. It's not a presumptuous kind of a discussion. It's a very real discussion between people, person to person, soul to soul, where somebody says, I do believe this to be true. And then you can just listen to the belief or accept, yes, this person has this belief. And the person, because of that deep understanding, would not mind that you believe something else according to your own understanding. So spiritual or philosophical liberalism or liberality is not a product of, shall we say, degradation. In reality, what it is a product of actually understanding that everything ultimately boils down to my belief. Ideas like absolute, ideas like this is the truth, do not seem to be philosophically very valuable. Whereas the idea that my belief is what drives what I do is a very valuable concept because it actually reflects the reality of what is really going on. Now, I'm not saying this because I want to somehow or another cast a bad light on people who have religious belief, because what I really finished saying was that everybody, everywhere works on this level all the time. The reason I'm explaining this is because one should be aware of what one is doing so that one can focus what one is doing. One can focus on what one is doing. For example, if I know that the whole power of what I do based on my belief and faith, I can focus on that element of it rather than just taking shelter of it being the absolute truth. Because when I just focus on something as being the absolute truth and this is it and that's right and I just have to sit back and relax within my understanding, it's not very powerful. Or after a while it can fall into fundamentalism or fanaticism. Whereas if I know that my whole connection to whatever I'm doing, my whole capacity to interact, my whole capacity to receive anything from any action does rest upon my belief, does rest upon my faith, I can focus myself that way and humbly, in the sense, do what I feel is right. And when I focus my energy on what it is that's the power of my action, I can do extraordinary things with it. For example, when I'm believing in certain forms of the Supreme, let's use Radha and Krishna as an example. I have such a faith in, I have such a belief in their divinity, their love, their existence. I can reach out and taste that connection due to the power of my energetic conviction. And due to the power of my conviction, I focus my whole consciousness on my deities, and there's nothing in me that has any doubt about it. There's no doubt. There's no like, is it so or is it not so, or maybe I'm doing this or maybe I'm not doing that. So just to review, when we are aware of what we are doing, when we know what we do and why we do it, it gives us greater power to do it rather than simply having some belief and not really understanding it. In other words, since everything is a belief, everything boils down to what we believe, we should just accept that fact instead of trying to disguise the fact that we have chosen to believe by simply thinking we're following someone else. When you listen to another person and you accept what they say, you are choosing to do so. You should be aware of that. You are accepting that this is correct. So you are the one who's got power here to accept or not to accept. If somebody tells you you have to believe, otherwise you're doing everything wrong, and you believe that, that's because you've chosen to believe it. You should be aware of that at all times, because when you are aware of the mechanism by which your life goes on, you will be able to focus it in ways which are according to what you want. Now let's talk about this power of belief a little bit more, because obviously, if I believe I can fly and I jump off the roof, I'm going to land on the ground and crack. Yet there are yogis who have such a focus of attention and focus of understanding that they see the solidity within the air and can step into it. Now that's not just a belief. That's an experience which has developed from their particular form of perception of things, their particular way in which they have focused their energies. We talked about that last week, so I'll move on. When we're speaking here about belief, we're speaking here about things which are not fantasy, but things which are reality to us. For example, those who really intensely believe that they are good will have incredible capacity to manifest that good. Those who are deeply convinced of their similarity with Radha and Krishna, with the Supreme, with the Divine, will have a very powerful capacity to connect with them. Those who are firmly convinced of the differences between themselves and God, of their itsy-bitsiness and their smallness and their servitude, and God is very great, far away, unreachable, will have that experience because that's how they're focusing their lives on the difference. Let me propose an alternative way of seeing reality that might be interesting. Go back to our understanding of the Supreme, of God, of the Divine as the resting place of all things within that matrix upon which every living entity is suspended in this dimensionless or multi-dimension continuum. And let's say that divine personality is giving us full facility, full capacity, with great potential for us to manifest ourselves according to the greatest possible way we could ever be. And let's say our business, our job, our responsibility is to just keep expanding our capacities as much as we can, expanding and evolving to the greatest possible way to our full potential, ever coming closer but never reaching our full potential as it expands. And that the most practical and optimal manner in which we can do that is to firmly believe in ourselves because of ourselves being that same spiritual energy as the Supreme. And to firmly believe that the Supreme has given this wonderful facility to me, and to firmly accept that conviction and in action, in space action, that we shall just simply develop ourselves as much as we can. And the only thing holding me back is my own belief. And as we expand our capacities, as we expand our energies, all of these natural capacities start to manifest. We become very clear in our minds and very peaceful because the inner nature is peaceful. Our hearts expand as our love just starts to manifest for the sake of others, to be of service to the world. Our psychic capacity expands as we can understand how energy is everywhere and how we can enter into it as we wish. Our capacities to use energy expand in ways in which we wish to focus according to our beliefs of how we can best be of service. So when we are just very concentrated and centered within ourselves, we may move towards Radha and Krishna with a very sympathetic power that just expands every step we take. And remember, the only thing that would be the obstacle would be when we say, I don't believe it. I don't believe in myself. I don't believe in what you're saying. I don't believe in such capacities. Now, why would somebody have such disbelief? It depends. There's a variety of reasons. Some believe that it's philosophically correct. Some believe it's according to the absolute reality. Some believe that they are very bad inside and don't deserve it. Just always remember that our belief system, our beliefs, that which we are really deeply convinced of, are going to rule what we are, what we become, how we act, how we develop, everything. So it seems to me that when one is a little bit honest about what is objective reality, what is truth, what is existence, and one focuses it very much on one's own point of view, it becomes so much more practical than trying to be this little speck in this huge existence, understanding the cosmic truth. Now, I want to put that point aside, but I'd like to just finalize or end with one of the things which stops us from believing in ourselves, and one of the things which prevents us from believing ourselves is exhaustion. It's very tiresome to have the full responsibility of the life, of our life, on ourselves. It's very tiresome because all the time we're having to choose, and all the time we're having to examine beliefs, and all the time we're having to adjust and compromise. And it's very tiresome. It's a lot of work. It's so much easier just to leave that in the hands of others. However, I had a very interesting experience. I went on a 3-day vacation, believe it or not. Even I couldn't believe I did that, but yes, I did it. And while watching the waves wash into the sea and seeing the sunset and the sunrise and all the beauty of nature, it really changed my perspective on things. And what I've noticed that it does is that it gives me more faith in me, because it gives me more strength to make those choices, to make those decisions, to have some reason to do it, because life is good in one sense, like that. I mean, after all, life gets tough when it's so much work, you know, and it's so much struggle, and it's so much pain, and there's various problems, and one gets very exhausted. So life's not fun when one is exhausted. But when one can relax and get rejuvenated in a very deep way, it really makes clarity, it makes conviction, and it makes understanding why we do what we do a lot easier. So if you have the possibility, it's a great benefit to just be able to get away, commune with nature, find peace with the environment, the beauty of the forest, or especially now that spring is coming. It is rejuvenating for the soul. And you will be able to experience a rejuvenation of your spirit, a rejuvenation of your faith in yourself, which is the essential ingredient towards spiritual realization. So I would like to take a break until the hour, and then if anybody has any questions, you can write to me. Otherwise, we can go into a meditation today. This question is, since we are the ones who have created the situation in our lives, this tough situation in our lives, is it not possible that we can also change that and make it easier for ourselves? If we've made this situation where things are very difficult and we have to struggle for self-realization, or struggle even for peace, or struggle for in all ways, can we, by our conscious decision, change a decision that we made before we took birth? Or in other words, to change our life structure or pattern. Now, naturally, of course, if it is our intention alone to create a certain pattern, then naturally we can change that pattern, of course. Yet, if it is not our decision alone, it is not only us who have made such a decision, it is not so that we can change it at will. After all, if others are involved, or other forces are involved, or other powers are involved, naturally there will be obstacles if we simply unilaterally want to make changes. So if you consider discussions we have had, or understandings we have had about the way that one goes from one life to the other, the way that one chooses tasks, the way that one chooses to develop, you will see that it is not just us who makes such decisions. For example, when we have undergone, when we have gone through experiences which were quite negative, which were quite destructive for us in our previous lives, and it has been cooperatively decided between ourselves and the authorities that are assisting us to allow us to transform through difficult situations, it would not be in our power to make changes unilaterally. Yet, nobody can say that we should therefore not make any changes, because how do you know that the possibility to change, or the work, or the potential to make the change was not also something that was built into your life pattern? So you could say that, okay, you can't change what has been done, but you do not know what has been not done, but you cannot change what has been decided, but you do not know what has been decided. So therefore, you cannot be sure of what you are allowed to change or not. So that adds a certain mystery to life, where you're not sure of what is to come. So therefore, you have to uncover it. You have to discover it. You have to work. So no one should ever think, oh, I can't change. Or no one should ever think, I shouldn't try to change. Or no one should ever think, I can change whatever I want. Because it is not sure. But what is definitely sure is that you have the right to try to make your life as best as it can. You have the definite right to endeavor to be the greatest version of yourself, or to always expand yourself and your potential. You have that right. Doesn't that remind us of the verse in the Bhagavad Gita that says, you have a right to work, you have a right to act, but you don't have a right to enjoy some kind of result from that? In other words, no result is fixed and it's yours that to have as you like. So it's very important for us to work as hard as we can in our own self-realization, to work as hard as we can in our own spiritual endeavors, because by doing so, we will get the best possible results in our own lives. To become fatalistic and think, well, I don't know what will happen, and I'm not sure if I'll get any result, or even if it's allowed or not, and therefore I won't do anything, that's not very practical, and it's also quite foolish. It's just like if you were to sit in front of food and think that, oh, this food's going to make me sick, I shouldn't eat it, or any food makes me sick, why should I eat? Give up eating completely and fast. One has to endeavor, one has to do things, but one should deal with each situation as it comes without expectations. And to change what you can, to understand what you can't change, to accept that, and in this way, go through life with a positive attitude, yet at the same time understand that life is a large thing, a large arrangement of people. There's a lot of personalities involved, and therefore it's not always obvious what we can do or how we should do it. I hope that was somehow or another a useful answer. I have another question here. Somebody is asking me about the books of Jasmuheen and whether or not I have tried not eating and just simply eating the energy of light. Yes, when we were there together in St. Petersburg, I don't know when it was, maybe a year and a half ago, maybe even 2 years, closer to 2 years ago, we were just so inspired by her energy that while she was there, we didn't have to eat. It was really a funny experience. If you are very convinced and believe in that particular way of doing things, you will connect to that group. You will connect to that energy, that violet light, which will feed one through the heart chakra. And you will be able to live like that in a very comfortable manner. It's definitely a practical technique and definitely one that we have tried. I mean, I have tried. I talk about me and Kamala, while she was there, and it was definitely working. We were not hungry in any way. But as soon as we flew back, we kind of lost that. And no longer was it possible or even desirable because we like to eat. It's not that it's a question of belief. I mean, I believe it definitely works. I mean, for sure, one can live like that. It's a question of desire. I know that's a pretty wishy-washy answer, but that's the truth. And I'm not exactly sure about how to properly speak this question, but the premise of the question is faith is the building, faith is building during life. And perhaps not even just in one lifetime. Obviously, the belief system is something which has been accumulating, developing, transforming, and evolving through many lifetimes. And here in this question is that our belief systems are also in our DNA. Now, that's an interesting point. I'm not exactly sure how I would speak about that, but I can believe that our belief, our faith in ourselves or other things would be there within the DNA somehow or another. And I know that it is definitely possible that the society within which we're born, the family within which we are born, absolutely would be a critical factor in supporting or adjusting our faith and belief. Yet the question is, how is it possible to overcome this? How is it possible to overcome this depth of infrastructure which is supporting the belief to move forward? Or is it at all possible on the subconscious level to change it? Well, that's more difficult to answer because, after all, one doesn't really know how ingrained or how burned into the personality one's faith is on the deepest levels of one's existence, because it may be so burned in one would never even consider changing it. But one who wants to change it, it may not be so burned in. I mean, if you think about it, if somebody has a deep, deep, deep desire not to have any transformation of his belief or faith, that means it's really burned deeply in there. And yet again, somebody who wants to change it, who doesn't like it, who's not comfortable with it, obviously, it's not deeply burned in there, just by definition. So I would reply that for those who want to change, change is always possible. Maybe not to the degree that we want, but some kind of change, some kind of adaptation is definitely possible. For those who don't want to change, it's not possible because desire is not there. We're not motivated. Now, that was a kind of obvious answer, and I'm not exactly sure if that was answering the question, but that's how I see the question. After all, if I was convinced that I should have a particular way of seeing things in this life, I would create a structure to support that. So therefore, when there is such a strong structure, there's a very deep reason for it. And when I don't have a reason to have it, I won't create it or support it, even if I have it. I hope that answered the question. Here's another question which I find to be very interesting. How to properly educate children so that they have faith in themselves? Well, I'm not sure education is necessarily, I mean, in the usual sense of the term, considering education as a scholastic event, an event where you're taught something in a academic type environment, I don't think that's the way to do it. I would not agree with that term, defined in that way. But if you were to define education in a different way, let's say education is much broader than an academic education. It's the things we learn in life that are significant to us. For example, the way our parents deal with us, or the way in which the world around us relates with us. I would say, yes, there is a possibility to do it. Let's say a child says to the parent, Mommy or Daddy, I think like this. You know, I think this is so. And the parent responds by saying, that is silly. That is no good. That is wrong. That is stupid. Obviously, this will make the child feel that they're not so smart. They don't really understand very much, and their opinion is not so important. This will reduce their faith in themselves. Whereas if you simply take whatever they say at face value, accept it, and discuss it with them according to the same way in which they presented it, they will feel respected. They will feel appreciated. They will feel that they have value. That will give them faith in themselves. And if they, for example, do something which may seem to be unusual, or they do something which will be seemingly hard to understand, and they are condemned for it, or judged for it, or criticized for it in a way which criticizes their intelligence, or criticizes their capacity, or motivations, or something like that, it will just smash their capacity to feel faith in themselves. Or if they are given a task which is way harder than their capacities to fulfill, that will also discourage them very much and reduce their faith in themselves. In other words, you have to give children tasks or give them an education in different ways, not just academically, let's say musically or athletically or whatever, where they are improving their skills a step at a time and not being forced to jump way ahead. Now, you've probably heard it before, but I'll use the example again because I think it's important. When I was young, I was learning the piano. And so my piano teacher was impressed with my capacity and had a lot of faith in my ability to learn. And I went through about 3 years level of piano in about maybe 6 months. So she gave me a piece which was beyond fifth year piano. It was incredibly complex. I think maybe it was called the Butterfly. I don't remember. I mean, maybe I think I've blocked it out of my mind. It was phenomenally complex. You looked at the sheet music and all you saw was black. Many, many black notes all over the place. You took one look at that and you go, whoa. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of the thirds with the having to use the pairs of thirds very rapidly in all kinds of unique ways, which it was a very complex piece. Very complex. I can't even say that enough. So I practiced it, and I practiced it, and I practiced it, and I was trying to memorize it, and trying to get it right, and trying to do it perfect, and working, and working, and working. But it was draining me very much, because it was over my head. It was too complex for my little fingers. So inside I was starting to say things like, why am I doing that anyway? Why am I doing this anyway? I could be out playing football. And I was starting to get annoyed with the piece. It was starting to annoy me. I was like angry at it. And even though it was like so, it was so foolish of me to do it in one sense, I lost my interest in learning classical piano because of that piece being too difficult for me. Now, my piano teacher, she was a wonderful person. She was very smart. She saw that the next time I came back, but it was too late. I had already lost confidence in myself. Now, somebody should say, yeah, but you should have kept on fighting it. You should have kept on trying. You should have made some adjustment, took a simpler piece. Yeah, that's easy to say, but I got discouraged. I admit it. So I saw that from then on, whenever I deal with children and I see them, I feel them struggling, I immediately stop it and say, hey, that don't do that. That's no fun. Try this. And I give them something easier, something that encourages them. You have to work to find out that level which is just a little bit beyond. A little bit inspiring, yet not too hard. When you create tasks for children which are beyond their capacities, it has the opposite effect. It discourages them. So one has to, when educating in life, not just academically, always make sure that one is working on the motivations, one is working on the why one should have faith in oneself. And of course you should have faith in yourself. You have done and you will do and you can do and you are good. And here we are supporting you and it's all okay. No stress. Now this is all easy to say, but when you're a parent, boy, is it difficult. Kids by their nature say things which adults think are stupid and we respond that way. It's just automatic. We even laugh because we think, oh, that's so silly. They couldn't possibly mean that. Yet it affects the child deeply. It's like dancing on eggs. You know, how do you do it? How do you not cause your child to have some difficulty? I once heard somebody saying that, yeah, I'm going to have a child and I'm quite sure I'm going to screw them up totally, even though I'm going to try my very best not to. It's just unavoidable. I mean, how can you do everything perfectly? It's impossible. And because children are so impressionable, at one point you're going to do something which is going to screw them up. Yet there is something that saves us, even though we are so imperfect in our ways of dealing with kids. And that is to admit, you know, okay, I'm sorry, that I really blew that. That was a mistake, and I'm very sorry, it was just not right. And, you know, I'm not perfect, and I make mistakes, and, you know, I'm dealing with this. To be honest, it's instead of trying to maintain some huge image, to be actually honest about what is the reality. You know, if you've got to maintain some image, you've got to maintain some way of being, which is not real, then that will, by definition, create situations which will cause difficulties and harm or trauma to impressionable minds. Yet, when one combines the responsibility with a mature understanding of honesty, a mature way of relating in a very non-dominating way, where they can actually feel that the parent is real, yet not sloppy. You know, you don't have to say things like, yeah, I'm a total idiot and I just blew my whole life away and I did all kinds of stupid things and I'm lazy. Not like that. I mean to say that I'm trying my best, but I made a mistake and I'm honestly trying to help you, but sometimes I just don't see it from your point of view. Maybe you could help me here or whatever. It helps. And support their dreams, support their aspirations, support their vision of themselves. This will give them great confidence. Because you are the one they look up to, and when you're supporting them in their own decision about themselves, they will feel very secure.